We're going to start our committee on rules for today. As you can tell, there are a lot of people here. And a lot of those people have to do with the bill we're going to hear first, which has to do with 3013. I'm waiting for my administrator to get back with a couple pieces that were of information that he was copying off and to bring back, and that should only take a moment. For other people who are waiting here for the bills, I wanted to let you know that we're going to hold over 3004. The amendments are not back, which is on the back of the agenda today. And for those of you who are here kind of for the first day, there's long agendas, and we have a rule now that if you don't have the fiscal statement or the revenue statement, you can't move them out until you look at those. And so a lot of these bills have to wait as amendments get done before we get those things and all the paperwork is done to move bills. So we keep scheduling and hoping that that stuff will be here on time. With that, since we do have our quorum now, I think I'm going to wait just, we'll stand at ease for a second waiting for our administrator to get back. He had a couple pieces of documents and I thought I saw him and it wasn't, and there he is. Okay, we don't have to stand at ease. Yep. Are you ready? Yep. So we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3013. With that, I'll have our administrator give a short introduction, recognizing that we actually have an amendment that's probably more important.
Correct. Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 3013 modifies various provisions relating to the Ocean Policy Advisory Council. Makes a legislative finding that wave energy provides renewable, sustainable sources of energy, repeals the sunset on prohibition against leases for exploration, development, or production of oil, gas, or sulfur in the territorial seas.
Hold all that stuff, because that's not what the bill is going to be. So we'll just talk about the amendment. Do you have the amendment?
I've got the amendment.
Okay.
Just going to go through it.
That's fine.
All right. Dash 4 replaces the original measure. Declares emergency and takes effect July 1, 2009. Requires Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to implement the recommendations of the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, directs ODFW to adopt the rules, study, provide support, and develop a work plan, specifies the content of the work plan, directs ODFW to make recommendations regarding marine reserve designation based on the work plan, requires ODFW to make a report on or before November 30, 2010 to an interim legislative committee, specifies the content of that report, directs the Department of State Lands to transfer certain funds, describes consultation and cooperation with relevant stakeholders and agencies, and requires the ODFW to conduct periodic review on the achievement of goals and make corresponding adjustments via rulemaking.
Okay, and with that, we have a group of people who are going to explain to us some of the
sent without recommendations.
The bill itself. So Ed Bowles, Scott McMullen, and Frank Warrens, if you want to all come up to the front, we'd love to have you. That's fine. You can. Go ahead.
The House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities sent this measure to the House Committee on Rules without recommendation.
And with that, Ed, we'll let you go first.
Thank you, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Ed Bowles. I am the Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And also in this capacity, I was also the governor's designee on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, consistent with Executive Order 0807, throughout this process to consider the designation, recommendations for the designation and for the evaluation of marine reserves. And I really do appreciate the opportunity to provide comment on House Bill 3013 with the Dash 4 amendments. I'm going to give just my task in this panel is really to provide a little bit of background on the amendments. They are substantial to the original 3013, and walk you through those briefly, and then I can answer any questions, but then we can get into some other folks that are up here with me to describe the views of OPAC and what went forward. So just as a way of background, OPAC was requested through the executive order to really recommend not more than 9 sites along the Oregon coast for consideration as marine reserves. And really the tough part of this was for OPAC to really come up with a balance that really managed the need to have these to be ecologically meaningful, but also not cause significant social economic hardship to coastal communities and ocean users. A very tough challenge. After incredibly thorough vetting and public involvement through the OPAC process, of which the agencies were very much involved, associated with the Marine Cabinet, resulted in 20 proposals at the end of last summer. And those proposals touched on 9 separate areas of the Oregon coast. And after really extensive review, both scientific among the agencies as well as public vetting and deliberations by OPAC, we came up with the November recommendations from OPAC that were consistent with the executive order. Now that's kind of the background for this. That then led in to the legislative session to consider the policy associated with this and secure the budget to move these recommendations forward. And so House Bill 3013 with the -4 amendments really, in a very simplistic way, statement, implements the OPAC recommendations. No more, no less. And it does so with the governor's recommended budget. Now, those recommendations, to boil them down, are really to establish or adopt rules to establish 2 pilot areas for marine reserves or marine protected areas. Those are at Otter Rock, which is just south of Depot Bay, and Redfish Rocks, just south of Port Orford. Further study and evaluation of 3 more sites. That's at Cape Falcon, Cascade Head, and Cape Perpetua. And that further evaluation will be done prior to any designation of those as potential marine reserves. And then, starting from scratch, another area near Cape Arago to actually, without having an existing proposal, move forward with a fresh start on developing a proposal there using a local community-based group. So 6 areas moving forward, 2 as pilot areas, 4 as either further evaluation or developing a proposal. So how does the bill go about implementing those OPAC recommendations? And the way it does it, to ensure that there's clarity on how the money will be spent and what everybody will be doing, it requires Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to develop a detailed work plan in collaboration with all the interested parties and local governments and others. We will be developing that work plan. We've already have a draft out. We will be finalizing that with the different parties, and that will direct how we move forward in implementation. It requires the department to also report on the implementation of that work plan and the findings from that implementation by the end of November of next year, both the legislature as well as OPAC agencies and the public. It funds the implementation of this work plan through a portion of the unobligated funds generated from the new Carissa settlement, and that's $1 million. And it also has a placeholder for potential donations and grants from outside sources. Now, the outside sources is a source of contention for potential funding, and so there's very real clarity within the bill to ensure that any outside monies received will have to be used to specifically implement only measures of that work plan that has been developed through this collaborative process. It also requires us to pursue long-term funding. This is simply a package to get us through this biennium. We, as agencies, will be pursuing more stable long-term funding that will have to come back to the legislature in the next session. And also requires us that if we cannot secure long-term funding, to commit to initiating actions to suspend or scale down fishery prohibitions if those long-term funds are not available, up to and including no prohibitions at all that would keep people from fishing in those areas. The bill also requires periodic progress reports on the effectiveness of meeting the goals that we're going to be establishing in this work plan. And these progress reports and the periodic review will be used to adaptively manage the sites, and that will be through a very public process that not only includes the rulemaking of the agencies involved, but also in consultation with OPAC and the public process that we're establishing. The implementation of this, the efforts associated with this bill will really be done through a bottom-up approach. We're in the process of establishing community-based teams, building off of those that have already established along the coast. These are coalescing around the need to address many issues, including wave energy, seafloor mapping, a lot of things that are coming into play on the coast. And that sort of community-based, bottom-up approach is going to be the model that is used to implement these actions as best we can. Speaking for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, we strongly support House Bill 3013-4. It really does effectively implement the OPAC recommendations and address the Executive Order 0807. But I'd also like to mention that this really is a tribute to the heavy policy lifting that OPAC has done in coming to this, what could be viewed as a compromise on how best to move forward on Oregon's terms for this very important but controversial issue. And the amount of public involvement and vetting and the professionalism of all those involved, I think, is a real tribute to the process, and I appreciate those efforts.
Thank you. And we'll go through the whole panel, and I want to note, because people have noticed, we have Senator Verger, Senator Johnson, and Boone up here, and they put this order together, and I think it's an honor of the OPAC people who worked so hard to get here, that you guys, generally we have them go first. So I just want to make that so people wouldn't keep sending me notes why did we forget them. So I didn't. We really do want to say thanks to these next two people for a lot of work that they did. So with that.
Chairman Robins, members of the committee, my name is Scott McMullen. I'm chairman of the Oregon Fishermen's Cable Committee in Astoria, 97103, and I'm currently serving as chairman of the Oregon's Ocean Policy Advisory Council. OPAC has not had a chance to meet since the House Bill 3013 was drafted, and particularly not since these amendments have been made. So I cannot come here and testify on behalf of OPAC. I can say that in my view, this bill with the amendments is consistent with the vote and the decision of OPAC when we met in December to reach a decision on marine reserves in Oregon. OPAC's recommendations, as implemented through House Bill 3013, represent a milestone in a collaborative process and reaching agreement amongst a wide variety of stakeholders and interest groups. As part of the OPAC process, Oregon Sea Grant held a series of public listening meetings up and down the coast. They transcribed over 1,000 public comments and issued a report to OPAC that was nearly 500 pages long. The entire process spanned several years, dozens of public meetings, extensive input from the public, local elected officials, agencies, and scientists. And I'd like to say that OPAC itself represents a broad spectrum of views on its membership. The November 29th OPAC recommendations are a result of significant compromise with a lot of give and take by all sides. And I now say I believe it's time to move those recommendations forward. I'm here in support of House Bill 3013-4, not only because it moves the OPAC recommendations forward, but because the bill as presently written, will allow a very public and collaborative process to move forward. And when I look around the room and I see a multitude of people who were polar opposites in their testimony at OPAC meetings, now joining together to support this bill, I think it's a real testament to the work that everyone has put on to reach a bill that is acceptable to most people. So I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of this bill, and I'd be pleased to try to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, we'll go with all three, and then we'll have questions.
Thank you, Chair Rovlin and committee members. My name is Frank Warrens, and I chair the OPAC Marine Reserves Working Group. I'm here to provide my full support for this bill, and thank you for allowing me to comment, and I'd be pleased also to answer any questions following my testimony. The two pilot reserves and the other reserve sites approved for further study and evaluation by OPAC last November are unique to the West Coast and are a product of over 3 years of work by our working group and OPAC combined. And as Scott has just stated, there has been a lot of movement on the part of all the parties to reach what appears to be a fairly substantial compromise. The primary objective of the, and this is a point that I wanted to emphasize in my testimony to you today, the primary objective of the proposed marine reserves is intended for them to serve as research reserves by monitoring their productivity when measured against reference areas outside the designated areas in order to determine their effectiveness. They're not intended to supplement stocks for harvest by either the commercial or the recreational fishery. If over time they result in the restoration of, to any degree of species within the reserve, that should be considered a bonus. Currently in Oregon, there are no documented marine fisheries or resource crises due to very conservative management by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Pacific Fishery Management Council, which I sit on as a member. In conclusion, I'd like to again let you know of my support for House Bill 3013-4 and recognize that the current language reflects a considerable degree of compromise on the part of all parties involved in crafting the objectives and purpose for marine reserves in Oregon. I want to again thank you and would be pleased to answer any of your questions.
Any questions, Representative Garrard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two, if you'll indulge
certainly.
Me.
Certainly.
And number one, gentlemen, all of the correspondence and letters I'm seeing are referencing the Dash 3 amendments. Is there any difference between the Dash 3s and the Dash 4s?
Chair Roblin and Representative Garrard, a very minor difference. It was a kind of drafting or clerical difference that we had missed on earlier versions, and it relates to the Port Orford pilot area site in Redfish Rocks. The OPAC recommendations had specifically included in there a marine protected area adjacent to the marine reserve in their recommendations, and we had just clerically hadn't mentioned that in the first part of the and it's now in the dashboard. You can read it in that third section. That is the only change that I'm aware of any substance. It was just words like the OPAC recommendations. Other marine protected areas are not part of the recommendations, and so they don't refer to the other part.
Thank you. And my
Thank
second
you.
Question, Mr.
Yes.
Chair, is in Section 5, under Paragraph 3 on Line 11, just the question about in a lack of, if you got into a situation for lack of funding, what about the prohibition on fishing in those marine areas? I just need assurance that you certainly, those responsible agencies, would indeed look at lifting any restrictions on fishing in those areas if there's no funding for scientific research.
Chair Roland, Representative Garrard, that is correct. As I mentioned in my verbal testimony, that this provision does include suspension of those prohibitions in its entirety if necessary.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Berger?
Yes, thank you. I do notice in the bill that the areas are treated somewhat differently in their language, and you have marine reserves and marine protected areas. I don't know if this is the panel to explain the difference.
Sure.
And why only one has a protected area and the others seem to be all about marine reserves.
Yes, Frank.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. Representative Berger, I might be able to give you a very short answer to your question with regard to the two designations. A marine reserve does not allow any disturbance or fishing or extraction of any kind within the areas designated as a reserve. The reserve may have next to it or adjacent to it a marine protected area or MPA in which there may be some allowed fishing activity that's not inconsistent with the objectives of that area.
So, any other explanation? I think that's a pretty good one. Representative Berger.
Well, do we already have marine protected areas, or is there just only one called out in this bill?
In the 20 proposals that were presented to OPAC, there were a number of marine protected area proposals in conjunction with marine reserve proposals. There were no standalone marine protected area proposals, but typically a site would be proposed that might be, let's just say it was 10 square miles, but adjacent to it might be another 20 square miles that was proposed as a marine protected area. OPAC, with the exception of the Redfish Rocks one, which is included in this bill, OPAC decided that none of those MPAs met the criteria that were the objectives that we were looking for. So the marine protected areas were rejected except for the Redfish Rocks one, which we felt was consistent and met the criteria we were looking for.
Okay, which explains why it's called out separately in the bill.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for this group? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now, Senator Verger, Senator Johnson, and Representative Boone. And thanks for coming all the way for you guys.
Good afternoon.
And welcome.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Joanne Berger. I'm the senator from District 5. Today I think I could talk to you about wearing several different hats. I might talk to you as the senator of a district that runs from Coos Bay to Lincoln City, which takes in a good part of the Oregon that we're talking about. Or I might talk about the Coastal Caucus, which I'm a very proud member of. But today I'd like to talk to you as a former mayor. Because you heard it mentioned that there's going to be a funding source that we've requested of $1 million that would fund this project. And the marine reserves have been under much discussion in the area. And during that time, there was a lawsuit, and there was some money left from that lawsuit, and that's part of this million. There was $2.4 million left. But what I want to tell you is that I was mayor when the new Carissa landed on the beach, and it was a saga. It was a story. But in about 48 hours, we had over 300 people to come into that small community of agencies from the federal government, from the state government, and the community reached out to these people not only with resources and hospitality, but the new Carissa became a part of that community. And so it broke off. They tried to burn it. It went to Walport. And it finally ended up a nice trophy on the coast. Everybody was quite proud. And the tourists came on Saturdays and Sundays, and they filled the restaurants, and they filled their tanks with gas. And people said, "This is wonderful. We've not only had a shipwreck, but now we have a tourist site on the coast." Well, we pled, begged, and cried, but they took the new Carissa away. So I think that the community feels, and rightly so, and I'd like to testify today that they believe that they should have the money that is left over from this lawsuit. And so there is the nexus, and I just wanted to be sure that the committee understood that nexus of why we're saying if you're going to do this, then this is the way it should be paid for. So thank you for allowing me to share my personal story with my brief time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16, and I, too, appear with a lot of hats. My district takes off at the Lincoln County-Tillamook County border with Senator Verger and goes north, but I am here today in my capacity as the chairman of the Coastal Caucus. The Coastal Caucus represents one-tenth of the legislature. We are nine legislators, Republican and Democrat, House and Senate. We convene to discuss issues that are of importance to the coast. Sometimes we can't agree that it's day out among ourselves. Other times we coalesce and speak with one voice representing the coast, and I am here today to express that voice. I am representing the Coastal Caucus in our unified, unanimous support for 3013, as you have it before you. This has been a hard-fought negotiation, and as a legislator, speaking to fellow legislators, I know how much you appreciate the concept of mortal enemies going out someplace and coming to common mind and then coming before the legislature and presenting their negotiated compromise for your consideration and hopefully your movement forward. This has been an extraordinary negotiation, and I want to use my mic time to particularly acknowledge a couple of folks. Ed Bowles worked heroically to try to come between the parties, find what they were saying, and incorporate that into the language of the bill. I also want to acknowledge Anna Packingham, who is a graduate fellow from OSU. She is the Sea Grant Fellow, will be defending her master's thesis in a couple of days. And Anna came and is housed in my office by dint of my service as the chair of the Coastal Caucus. This is Anna's first public policy exposure, and with Ed, she has worked tirelessly to negotiate among folks who don't normally come to agreement on the language that you see before you, and I want to take this opportunity to acknowledge her service. We commend this bill for your consideration. When we took it down to Ledge Council, it was with the admonition that literally every semicolon, every period, every capital letter had been negotiated. Anna worked diligently to make sure that all voices were at the table, and I hope we have produced a product for you, as you have heard from the OPAC folks, that recognizes and honors their deliberations, their huge outreach and public process. We believe that this bill represents a historic compromise on a contentious issue. I know that I was joined with fellow coastal legislators when we first heard about the prospect of marine reserves in united terror that this was something that was going to be done to the coast and not with the coast. And I am especially proud to say today I believe you have a work product that represents collaboration, that takes in coastal voices. We commend it for your consideration. We ask you to move it forward. We think this is a good piece of public policy, and we appreciate your consideration of this important collaborative work product.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Deborah Boone has District 32, and half of my district is sitting behind me. and thank you all for coming. It looks like an OPAC meeting back there. I'm just here to add my voice to the support, and as a member of the Coastal Caucus, everything that Senator Verger and Senator Johnson said is absolutely true, and it's kind of like I said to Anna, this is like having a baby. This has been quite the trip, and so I hope that you will look through the information and know that this product, on this map that you received from Ed Bowles, this is where they started with the OPAC process, and this is where the agreement ended up. The numbers are slightly smaller, obviously, but especially in these tough times that we're having, we feel extraordinarily privileged and honored to have received the support and the courage of our co-chairs in giving us this trust to do this project the right way, which we've done. This fulfills one of the governor's, his executive order as he set out. This fulfills the start of this project, and hopefully we will gain a lot of research information and data. We heard the other day that the seafloor mapping will go forward. We've heard recently that NOAA has awarded or will be awarding very soon a contract to an engineering firm to start their end of the seafloor mapping and navigational chart updating. It's moving forward. This is all part of the same piece. The new Carissa money settlement, a big boon to, and no pun intended, to the coast, and Senator Berger had to carry that to us in good faith. We are hoping that this all finishes out very nicely. This keeps that money on the coast where it should be, and that's something I think should be a model to all of our agencies when they fine people, that the fine money comes back and corrects the wrong that has been done. And I think this does it in a nice way. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Any questions for this group? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next we'll have Mike Carrier and Susan Drew.
Thank you. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, and Mr. Carrier, thank you very much for letting me go forward. I am Susan Drew Allen, and I am the director of a coalition called Our Ocean. We represent 60,000 members statewide, and have been working and participating in this the OPAC process. We submitted a proposal, actually a network of proposals. And we are here to support the amendments to House Bill 3013, as we believe that it respects and reflects the spirit of Governor Kulongoski's Ocean Policy Advisory Council's recommendations. During the state process, much happened. There's much water on the bridge, but I think there's also been some creative solutions that have arisen out of this. Our Ocean believes that supporting the six sites that were recommended by OPAC reflect a compromise that allows all stakeholders to move forward productively and constructively. The amendments provide the necessary articulation of a clear, balanced, and diverse process to advance this effort. In order to ensure all discussions move forward productively, the Dash 4 amendments include a clear timeline. Our Ocean and its member groups are hopeful that the amendments will allow all parties to foster stronger relationships and partnerships in a robust stewardship discussion. We believe that this discussion will help ensure that Oregon's ocean health and productivity are sustainable. We believe the process and the policy represents a prudent investment in the advancement of an important discussion that spans over two gubernatorial administrations in 8 years. Significant state resources and agency time have already been invested, and House Bill 3013 will ensure this process continues to advance. With best available science and the local knowledge to guide us, Oregon can develop a system of marine reserves that will help sustain the health of our ocean. Marine reserves are a proven management tool that maintains critical habitat and supports biodiversity and resilience in marine systems. As these areas are further considered, we trust the OPAC policy guidance document and the sizing and spacing workshop results will be considered, as those results emphasize the fact that each habitat type hosts an array of wildlife. The best way to ensure the maximum benefit to the state is to ensure that all major habitat types are represented within the OPAC sites. We are especially heartened that these amendments describe the formation of diverse and balanced community groups that will be able to discuss marine conservation and make recommendations by November 2010. This will foster the best policy outcome.
Oregonians have a proud history of environmental stewardship. Think of our parks and the Beach Act. Developing a system of marine reserves is the next logical management step to better ensuring one of our largest state resources. Our ocean and its coordinating groups will commit to constructive participation as we move forward. I would like to close by thanking all participants in the process who have creatively knitted this amendment together. And I would also like to thank the Coastal Caucus and their staff for their diligence.
Thank you very much. I guess we'll take both and then we'll have questions. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Mike Carrier, Governor Kulongoski's Natural Resources Policy Director, and I'm here to, I provided a letter for the committee, but I'm here to bring the full weight of the governor's support for this bill, House Bill 3013-4, and on his behalf to encourage you to support this bill as well. As has been stated in previous testimony, the governor's reviewed this bill and agrees with the three following statements. This bill is fully consistent with the governor's recommended budget. It's fully consistent with his executive order 0807, and it's fully consistent with the recommendations of the Oregon Ocean Policy Advisory Council. The governor wanted me to especially acknowledge that the development of this bill by the Coastal Caucus under the leadership of Senator Johnson does represent an incredible amount of hard work and cooperation to reach consensus on a very important issue regarding the next steps that we as a state take in marine conservation issues along Oregon's coast. The governor's deeply appreciative for the work of the Coastal Caucus on this, and he's grateful to the Ways and Means co-chairs for recently announcing their support for the appropriations that are expressed in 3013-4. Their support and their commitment to that appropriation, I think, amplifies the importance and the need for this bill. With that, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you both. Any questions for these witnesses? Seeing none, thanks both of you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Nick Furman and Sean Miller. Thank you for being here.
Representative Roblin and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nick Furman. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission and spokesperson for Seafood Oregon, the state's for a consortium of the state's four industry-funded commodity commissions that represent the albacore, salmon, trawl, crab fisheries in Oregon. Because of the size of the audience today, I think it'd be wise of me to stick to my scripted and prepared remarks so I don't say or do anything that would make that would take Joe Biden off the hook. As representatives of Oregon's commercial fishing industry, we support the proposed amendments to HB 3013. We believe marine reserves may be beneficial if they are, one, developed in collaboration with fishermen and others who know Oregon's territorial seas, two, adequately funded to produce beneficial science, established for a limited period to determine both their value and potential impacts. In the present state, HB 3013 provides those sideboards necessary to allow the process to move forward carefully and with adequate controls. The two reserves recommended by the Governor's Ocean Policy Advisory Council and included in HB 3013 were developed with appropriate community participation and collaboration. That same level of local involvement and process transparency should be applied to the review and evaluation of the additional marine reserve sites under consideration in this bill. As is stated by people who spoke before me, Oregon's marine reserve debate has been long and often contentious. The collaborative effort exemplified in HB 3013 should be the model for future dialogue if we want the outcomes to truly represent the best interests of the many stakeholders involved. We look forward to working with the state's fisheries managers as they take on the daunting tasks outlined for them in this piece of legislation, and as responsible stewards of our territorial seas, offer our support for this as this initiative moves forward. And I would just like to echo the sentiments of the other speakers in our gratitude and appreciation for the Coastal Caucus and their staff for doing really the heavy lifting that brought these diverse parties together in consensus so that we could be in support of this bill today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Coastal Conservation Association and its 4,000 sports anglers in the state of Oregon. And I do also want to support House Bill 3013 and the -4 amendments. During the OPAC process, the group that I represent was at polar opposites, as was described earlier in, I think, the previous panel. I can say that through the development of the language in the -4 amendments that I know Anna and Senator Johnson and the Coastal Caucus put together, every word was negotiated, and we were able to come to a consensus. The three I supplied you are written comments, so I will not go through those, but I will state for the record that just based on our national marine reserve policy, I think there was three areas of agreement that were included in the bill that I'd just like to talk about. First, the development of scientifically based goals in these reserves, which is on page 2, section 2, sub 2E, in developing that work plan. Again, the key is scientific. In section 6 of the bill, the periodic review, which is very important in that process, and also that implementation of the work plan will not consist of monies from tag and license fees. I think the sports community is very was concerned about that initially, and I think this bill addresses that issue, and we're satisfied. And so I again want to thank the committee and a lot of the work that has been put into this effort, and we support the Dash Force. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Thank you both. Next, and I forgot someone earlier, so Robin Hartman, Lisa Cobb, and Lauren Goddard.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition is in support of the Dash Force amendments to HB 3013. We believe these amendments will serve to implement the November 29, 2008 recommendations from the Ocean Policy Advisory Council.
Be sure and identify yourself.
I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. I'm Robin Hartman with Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition. Oregon Shores serves over 500 members. We have 1,300 mile adopters for the coastline. We were formed right after the beach bill was passed, and we were formed in 1971. What I wanted to say today is that I've had the honor and what has felt like a great responsibility to serve on the Ocean Policy Advisory Council since I was appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate to fill the coastal environmental slot on the council in 2005. Our November OPAC recommendations were the culmination of a lot of blood, sweat, tears, time, and taxpayer funding to support our meetings, gather the public comments, and compile the best available data about Oregon's important marine ecological areas. By my calculation, in 2008 alone, we held 16 all-day meetings, either the full OPAC or the OPAC Marine Reserve Working Group. These were held in Astoria, Newport, Charleston, Garibaldi, Reedsport, Florence, Lincoln City, and Salem. And that's not counting the series of outreach meetings hosted by Sea Grant and ODFW or the series of listening meetings that the governor's staff provided along the coast. We heard from thousands of citizens. And as folks have said so far, the recommendations we put forward represent a compromise. What you didn't hear after our recommendations were released was an outcry from any corner for what has been at times a very contentious issue that, to me, speaks volumes. As OPAC Chair Scott McMullen stated in the closing of our council's November 2008 letter to the governor, OPAC has taken a long road to get to this point, and we recognize there is a great distance yet to travel. No one on OPAC is fully satisfied with the results reported here, but perhaps that is the truest indicator of a great compromise. We are confident what we have done here will advance our understandings of Oregon's ocean resource. So in closing, we would urge the committee to support House Bill 3013 with the Dash 4 amendments to advance the OPAC recommendations. We thank the committee and the Coastal Caucus for their work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Lisa.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lisa Cobb. My husband and I own a commercial fishing boat that fishes for black cod, crab, tuna, halibut, and nearshore live fish in Port Orford. And I work for the community fisheries program known as Port Orford Ocean Resource Team, or PORT. Many of you have met me and the commercial fishermen from my community who traveled to Salem several days in February to meet with legislators in support of OPAC's recommendations to the governor for marine reserves. We also urged you to take... We also urge you to make sure that funds from the new CARISA be used to continue the Marine Reserve work in Oregon. I'm here today to offer our enthusiastic support for House Bill 3013-4, which accomplishes both of these important tasks.
our organization, Port, took on the Marine Reserve issue because we repeatedly heard people in our community say that they wanted to participate and help shape decisions about the ocean in our region. We have several years of ocean, we have had several years of ocean regulations coming down on top of us with little or no understanding of what happened. The OPAC process on Marine Reserves was set up for community participation, and we wanted to weigh in. We read stacks of scientific and socioeconomic papers written about marine reserves around the world, and we worked for more than 2 years on outreach to our community to help decide how to respond to the OPEC process. To help our community learn about marine reserves, we used workshops, newspaper articles, educational displays at the library. We held meetings and focus sessions with the fishermen and made presentations to civic groups. Port's Board of Commercial Fishermen decided they wanted to select a local marine reserve site to protect important habitat, protect important nearshore fish stocks, and minimize economic impact to our community. After many months of work, the decision was that Redfish Rocks is the best location to meet our goals, and we nominated the Redfish Rocks Research Reserve in the OPAC process. As you know, OPAC made extensive recommendations to the governor as to areas that should move forward, and our nomination was among those that OPAC voted positively on. We commend you, Mr. Chairman, the committee and staff, and the members of the Coastal Caucus for your hard work on House Bill 3013-4. It is a bill that we are proud to support.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I'm Lauren Goddard from Depot Bay. I'm a charter boat operator, owner and operator, and I'm also the chair of Depot Bay's Nearshore Action Team. We're here to lend our support to House Bill 3013-4. We feel that it represents a reasonable compromise, and it's not one that has been easy to get to the point that you're at. The concerns of the Depot Bay Nearshore Action Team, we feel, have been addressed very well regarding community involvement, public vetting, and pilot program boundaries, particularly mission creep, which has been a great fear. NSAT has been involved in the an extensive public vetting program of the Otter Rock site, and we were in fact able to hand ODFW essentially a finished product through our work. So we're happy to see this go forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this group? Thank you all. Those were the many of the groups that were intimately involved from the very beginning and all the conversations we had to get there. And so the next group of witnesses are people who came today and signed up and wanted to be here. And so Terry Thompson, Louise Soliday will bring up next, and then I'll get going down the list.
Okay. Well, my name is Terry Thompson, Lincoln County Commissioner, commercial fisherman in Depot Bay, and own boats in big trawlers and crabbers and shrimpers in Newport. I've been involved with this since day one. I sit on OPAC, and in fact, I want to first bring up that the Dash 4 amendments really rectify what was my original motion at OPAC to put the marine protected area inside of 3013. So that's what the Dash 4 amendments do. First of all, when I walked in here, this looked like a meeting of the Oregon Salmon Plan. It brought back a lot of memories. I think this bill does do what I said we could do in Oregon, and that's to move us forward to building the best marine reserves in the world. California has built them. They're having lots and lots of problems. I think we've made a big step by this bill at eliminating a lot of the problems they had there. I'm going to address Section 2C, the community action teams. I think this is a critical component, and I want to make it absolutely clear what Section 2C does. It creates the flexibility to allow the different marine reserves to have different makeups. That's very important. Each marine reserve may have a different fishing industry, a different bunch of environmental issues, and it's important that we have that flexibility in order to directly resolve those issues amongst the communities. Lincoln County has a particularly big challenge. We have three. We have half the marine reserve sites on the coast. We share each end, the north end with Tillamook and the south end with Lane County. That's going to be a particular problem that we're going to face in Lincoln County. But last night, a big step was moved forward when the Fine Committee, which is fishermen involved in natural energy, which also is involved in marine reserves, asked that Lincoln County work to develop a community team, which is described here in the Cascade Head site, which I did not ask for, but I'm sure trying to move forward. I think that we've got support to try to develop this. It's going to take a little bit of time, but it's a big step in moving forward to making real compromise between all the parties. And
thanks for a great job.
Anna has done a marvelous job to create this.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Louise Soliday, Director of the Oregon Department of State Lands. In the words of many of you, good bill should pass. I just want to mention that the $1 million that is identified in Section 4 is contemplated in our agency's budget request that sits before the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. There are a couple of places where the Land Board is identified in this bill as having rulemaking responsibility, which they understand. Once we get to a recommendation on specific reserves, it'll be the responsibility of the Land Board to actually adopt those through a rulemaking process, and we are prepared to do that. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for these witnesses? Thank you very much. And you set a great standard. Quick, over. We have a lot of people and not very much time because we have about 8 or 9 other bills. So, John Holloway, Hans Rotke, Dean Ferguson. Come on up. Find a seat. Hans, you can start.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Hans Rotke. I live at 6340 10 Mile Creek Road in Lane County on the coast. I'm a natural resource economist. I've worked on economic matters on the coast for 30 years. I'll make it very short. I'm looking forward to this bill passing because one of the sections in here says that you're going to do an socioeconomic assessment. And my view, the marine reserves would not affect the, in this bill, would not affect the economy of the coast at all, but there would be some great benefits from that. So I'm looking forward to 2B being economic assessment. And I'm also enthusiastically support this for one other reason. There's about half of the rockfish in the ocean we know nothing about. In other words, they have not been assessed. And so I look at the marine reserves as a possibility of an insurance program of things that we don't know anything about that we will get more information about to protect us for some future problems. And so I'm just in support of this.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Chair Roblin, my name is John Holloway. I'm the co-chair of the Recreational Fishing Alliance, Oregon State Chapter. I am also speaking today for Oregon Anglers and the 13 clubs that make up that body. Myself and our members are involved in international, federal, state fishery management on various bodies, councils, and committees. Also involved in wave energy. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The Recreational Fishing Alliance Oregon Chapter has been involved in the OPAC Marine Reserve process for 3 years, often being the only fishery representatives in public testimony during individual meetings. RFA has worked collaboratively with all stakeholders and OPAC members to help develop the OPAC recommendations. RFA believes HB 3013-4 is a good start to placing marine reserve requirements in statute. We believe some additional issues need to be included. One, a private funding cap. We believe that when citizens' access is being denied to sustainably managed public resources, that citizens should fund the majority of the related costs. As in business, controlling interest is vital and should lie with the state. We are asking for it to be stated that private funding be limited to no more than 49% of the total of state government funding of any marine reserve, no fishing zone. Mitigation, as in land use planning, there are financial burdens and opportunities with any change in spatial allowed use of resources. A denial of access to marine resources would produce an economic burden to some stakeholders. It should be required for that burden to be shared by all, not just a few. Mitigation can take many forms. Examples are funding seafood marketing to increase its value, direct funding to harvesters for lost opportunity, funding of projects which could increase opportunities, such as fishery independent surveys of yellow-eyed rockfish, and providing salmon hatcheries additional resources. It is important that mitigation measures be a required element of funding no-fishing marine reserves. Three, and last, a sunset or reauthorization requirement. Many state and federal statutes have a reauthorization requirement in order to reevaluate their relevance to conditions in the future. The federal Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act, the existing federal fishery management statute, is one of those. A suggested reauthorization every 6 years would fit with Oregon's legislative structure. Any rules or statutes which restrict citizen access must be periodically reviewed by publicly elected officials in order to achieve full accountability. The Recreational Fishing Alliance is not opposed to HB 3013-4 as presently written. If the aforementioned issues were to be incorporated, our support would be offered in total. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, my name is Dean Ferguson. I'm from Astoria, Oregon. I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to comment. I've been working recently with Clatsop County to try to establish a group to help work on the marine reserves as per HB 3013-4. I would like to support HB 3013-4 and would also like to second John Holloway's recommendations to add modifications to the bill. I'll be short.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Seeing none. I very much appreciate your being here today, so thank you. Next, we have Lauren Goddard. I don't think I got Lauren before. And Richard Darling and Rod Harder.
Hi, my name is Richard Darling. I'm just a someone who's concerned about the marine reserve issue, been following it, and I'm just a fisherman. Took the day off of work, the afternoon off of work to come down here, and feeling that this is the culmination of 2 years of attending meetings and listening to many voices and opinions, and I've been adamantly opposed to marine reserves from the beginning. I have seen no need for them. I've heard that they would make great research sites. We currently have many areas of off our coast and that are set aside, areas that have yet to be studied. We have, I have not a lot of faith in the voices that have been proponents of the marine reserves that I don't know, I haven't seen any hard science that justifies the need for marine reserves. I've heard that they could be buffers against catastrophic oil spills, against, you know, runoff from land. And so, but it is nice to have been as a, not a participant, because I'm not, I'm just a viewer. just as a citizen to watch a legislative process take, you know, form from, you know, from just a vague to where we're at now. It's kind of interesting to see government in process. And that's all I have to say.
I appreciate that. Thank you for coming.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder. I'm here today representing my grandkids. I'm a member of Keep Oregon Fishing and Mid-Willamette Valley Fishing Club, and I'm not representing them. I'm just a member. I'm one of the people that shared Representative or Senator Johnson's concerns when I looked at some of the proposals on this, and I did not even get involved until about 2 years ago, and I looked at some of the closures that were being proposed, and I was, in fact, terrified. And that is why I got involved with this. I have been involved with it peripherally for the last couple of years. A couple of things I would like to point out. One is that research is absolutely necessary. As is covered in this bill, if we don't know where we start, we'll never know where we're going or where we are after we're finished. With regard to funding and Representative Garrard's question, I was very concerned, and we are very concerned, that that is absolutely adhered to. If the funding goes away, the prohibitions on fishing must go away with it. With regards to funding, we're concerned that no more license and tag fees will be used to fund this program. And we'd just like to say that we support this, or I support this. It has been an eye-opener to me, after doing a lot of negotiations myself, how this has come about and how it's been boiled down to the bill that we have today. And I thank everyone involved for doing it.
Thank you. Any questions? Gus Gates, Christine Lewis, and I'm going to say this wrong, Pooja Bhaskar.
And again,
before I get started, thanks for each of these people on short, succinct statements. It's really been helpful.
Yes.
That's just a reinforcer.
Chair Roblin, members of the House Rules Committee, for the record, my name is Gus Gates, Oregon Policy Coordinator for the Surfrider Foundation, a lifelong coastal resident from the community of Florence, and lifelong recreational fisherman, scuba diver, and aquatic recreational user. I'd just like to say real briefly, on behalf of Surfrider's 600-plus recreational members here in the state of Oregon, that we support House Bill 3013 with the Dash 4 amendments. I think that the Dash 4 amendments encompassing the marine protected area at Port Orford is a very important addition, and we've been involved in that project for a long time. We've submitted written comments, and I'll end my comments there and pass it along.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Christine Lewis, live in Milwaukee, Oregon, and I'm here as a conservationist and also as a member of the Our Ocean Coalition. I have a written statement to submit, but I would like to urge you to support the Dash 4 amendments, and thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you.
I have nothing to say that Christine Lewis didn't already say, so I'm just going to go
ahead. Make sure and make your name, though.
My name's Pooja Bhaskar. I'm from Portland.
Well, thank you very much. So David Harrison, Melanie Rowland, and is it Danielle Rayburn? Is that somebody similar to name?
No, Darrell.
Darrell, come on up. You can come on up. Oh, no. No. Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
And Brock Howell is the only other person that's on our list. So go for it. I guess you're by yourself.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm David Harrison, president of Salem Audubon Society, and I'm testifying here today on behalf of our 1,600 members in support of House Bill 3013 with the amendments. Oregon has many parks and refuges that protect pieces of our various ecosystems on land, but we currently have no designated areas to protect the tremendous diversity of life in our oceans. This bill will start to rectify this imbalance. A network of marine reserves is like an insurance policy, providing security for ocean resources that are under pressure from pollution, fishing, climate change, and onshore development. With just six small sites, this bill represents a very modest step forward, but it's an important one, and I urge you to support it.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So that looks like the whole list. Is there anybody else that I missed who would like to testify? Good. We're going to close the public hearing on 3013. We're going to come to a work session in a second, probably, on this bill, because I think it's ready. But we have the speakers here has to speak on one bill, so we're going to open, what's the number? HJR 13A, a public hearing on HJR 13A. And even before we give a short explanation, Representative Hunt, if you'd like to come forward. You can bring anybody you want with you. You can go give a short explanation. Just do a short
part. Thank you, Mr. Roblin, members of the committee. House Joint Resolution 13A revises the Oregon Constitution subject to voter approval. It exempts taxing districts from Measure 5 and 50 bond limitations if the bonds incurred after January 1, 2011 to finance capital costs. It defines capital costs and limits the life of bonds, allows the state to issue general obligation bonds up to 0.5% of the market value of real property. Has a number of other provisions, including defining capital costs as cost of land and other assets with a useful life of more than 1 year, including construction, remodeling, furniture, to repair. Submits a revision resolution to the voters at the May 2010 primary election.
And with that, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Representative Dave Hunt. This resolution will look familiar, actually, to all of you. I'm not used to appearing before committees that have no freshman members. you'll recall that we passed this bill. It was actually also HJR 13 in 2007. Passed on a 52-6 vote and went over to the Senate. And this is the first time this ever happened. A House bill passed through the House.
They actually tried to amend it in the Senate.
It would have passed had it gone to the Senate floor, but they added some amendments on in the Senate Revenue Committee that they got too cute by half and lost the votes to be able to pass on the Senate floor. So it comes back in its largely its original form. It's been tweaked slightly. It really is focused on the core goal, and we've done several things in the last couple sessions, trying to assist and give local K-12 districts some tools to be able to address their capital needs. That's true for high-growth districts that have all the needs of growth and adding new facilities and adding on to facilities and adding new capacity. But it's also true for every district in Oregon because the buildings are just aging so fast and they really have not had adequate tools to be able to address those needs. And unlike the state of Washington, which has really stepped up and said to K-12 districts, we the state are your partners, we're going to help you address capital construction needs. In Oregon, we've said to districts, you're on your own, figure it out, pass bonds, do whatever you can at the local level, and your local taxpayers have to figure it out. This gives, much as we did with double majority reform, much as we did last session with the construction excise tax, this bill provides one additional set of tools. Does not solve the problem, but one additional set of tools in the toolbox to allow the state to issue GO bonds for K-12 capital construction. It does not, which I should point out, is the exact same bonding authority we already have for community colleges, for universities, for veterans' homes, and for, I believe it's 14 other categories of things, literally, but not currently for K-12. We've got a little, we could actually technically do some bonding for K-12 seismic needs because of the seismic provision in the Constitution, but nothing beyond that. This would give broader authority that the state could do bonding for K-12 capital. It also, as Jerry said, creates a slightly broader definition of what capital needs are. So local districts, when they are issuing bonds on their own, right now, having been on a school board, as some of you have been, when you go out with a capital bond, you can do the capital bond to support construction of the facilities. You cannot do a capital bond to actually furnish the new facilities. And so you have to take that out of operating dollars, which is kind of an insane definition currently. So it would fix that, not just for any state bonding, but also for local bonding. We worked with a lot of groups throughout the interim in this session, had broad bipartisan support last session, and you can see that continues if you look at the co-sponsor list. This has also been reviewed by Bond Council, Department of Justice, and by the Treasurer's Office Debt Management Division to make sure we have all the technical components correct. And would recommend it to you and be happy to take any questions you may have.
Is that a question? Any questions? Thank you very much for taking some time spending with us.
Thank you. Lovely to see you all.
Oh, Representative
Edwards. I would just note that you're shorter right there than you are behind the rostrum.
Representative Gelster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, I would just note that I first heard this bill in education, which meets at 1, and then I heard it in revenue, which meets at 8, and now I've heard it in rules, which meets at 3. So I'm hoping that you don't assign me to a new committee, because I'm afraid that next I'll hear it at 7, and I hope that means it's soon on its way to the floor. And
I'm just going to, Mr. Chair, Representative Gelser, I'm just going to be at your house tonight to personally present it to you at 7 o'clock.
I will not be there. And Revenue Town Hall, but you can come present it there.
Thank you very much. So we'll leave this public hearing open, and we have some other testimony, but first I'm going to go back and open a work session on 3013. So with that, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3013. Representative Edwards. Oh, here we go.
We're back on 3013. Okay.
Yeah.
I move the Dash 4 amendment stated May 18th, 2009 into House Bill 3013.
Representative Edwards moves the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3013 dated May 18th, 2009. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? So the Dash 4s are adopted. Representative Edwards.
Is this going to the floor?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3013 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3013 to the floor as amended, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Berger.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to all of you, and particularly thank you to the folks who've worked so hard. When I first heard about it, it was with horror from some folks who came into my office and said, this is a disaster. And then I heard, well, we're working on it. And I've been keeping track here. I won't repeat all your names, but I have this long list of this group and that group and another group who support this bill. And then I have some folks who have questions and things that are like to work on. I realized that there was not that unanimity on every point here. But I think the most telling point was the gentleman, the fisherman, who said he still didn't support the bill, but he sure learned a lot about process. And I wish all processes would work this well, where people come together, start miles apart, and then in the end can all come in and say, yeah, this is, we've gotten somewhere significant and we're on board with it. It's to be hoped that the rest of the session looks like this with every bill, but thank you all who worked on this, and I'm really proud to be able to say yes on this bill.
Any other? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was first exposed to the issue generally last summer and attended and helped help moderate a forum on the issue in Eugene, and then in the subsequent months, I can't remember how long it was following that, was given an earful by relatives who live in your district, Mr. Chair, as I do have a number of family members who live in the Coos Bay area and some right on the coast and are avid sport anglers and whatnot in the ocean. And I guess all I can say at this point is kumbaya, let's vote.
Any other? Representative Gelser.
Mr. Chair, I too received a lot of communication about this, and while we don't have any coastal lands in Corvallis, we have many people who travel regularly to your district and the districts of our coastal caucus who were very concerned and very interested in a good process, and I'm very pleased that one was put together. It's really encouraging to see all of these folks come together on the same page supporting this bill, and I'm very excited about that and look forward to moving this on.
Thank you. And it has the fiscal we have on record does indicate that it costs $2 million, which is what we knew all along, and with the co-chairs, but none of it comes from general fund. It's all other funds and the recommendation from the coastal. That's why we don't necessarily have to send it to Ways and Means, because this is not general fund money. And over time, my statement, and as a whole lot of people here, if we're going to keep this going, we are going to have some real conversation about general fund money funding this, or they aren't going to be there, because I think that's a part of the whole process. And I feel really good about the fact that it is in good shape. Question? Yeah, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like my good friend, Senator Gelser, I've heard this bill in more committees on more different occasions, or this particular issue in more committees on more different occasions. And I just have one observation. I am eternally grateful that there wasn't more money with the new Carissa. because otherwise we'd be looking forward to more bills and more of that. And so I think we're going to manage to get all of the money on the new Carissa spent this session. And that will leave us with a certain amount of relief, I think, when we have to dig for real money, as you're indicating.
Yeah, that's true. Other discussions, suggestions, concerns? Okay. Then we'll have a roll call vote.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Excuse.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Rowland?
Aye. Motion passes, and I will carry this on the floor as a Coastal Caucus member. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
My apologies. Representative Jensen and I have to leave to attend another committee meeting. So.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. As long as we keep Reed around, we're still here. Okay. So while everybody's moving, we're going to go back to the public hearing on House Bill H.J.R. 13. Okay. So we just need some testimony. Do we have any? So what about the do we have any? This is okay. I'll open it and let you testify.
You've been there, done that.
Yeah. So while we're doing this, we're going to also really quickly open a public hearing on 3484, because we have a representative that needs to get to another meeting. 3484 public hearing. Representative Escobar. Have to leave, so we...
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 3484 requires persons to facilitate like-kind exchanges to make certain notifications and to provide bonds or other securities in specified amounts. It prohibits an exchange facilitator from taking certain actions at sunsets in January, on January 2, 2014. I won't go into the background to save us time, but I assume that most of you are familiar with like-kind exchanges in the real estate area.
We'll leave it there, and they can explain if they want. Representative Escobar.
Sal Escobar, representing District 6, for the record. I'm not sure that everyone is familiar with a like exchange, so I will give you a 30,000-foot view. You have a property that you sell. If you touch one penny of that property, you pay taxes on it. You can, in fact, put it in the hands of a facilitator. The facilitator holds the money, and then you, as a principal, have 45 days, I believe, to recognize and get some properties in line, and then you have 180 days to consummate and finish that transaction. If you touch that money at one time, you pay taxes for it. So the facilitator handles the money. So therefore, you defer your taxes. That's why we're here today, is about the facilitator. There's a slight little flaw in the system, and that is there isn't much regulation on facilitators. In fact, I believe my good friend here, Alan Brickley, will explain that maybe we've lost some great amounts of money throughout the United States due to these facilitators. Since there's no guidelines, I believe one individual in the state of Oregon purchased a facilitation company, took the money, put it in his business, and lost the money, and it wasn't his. I believe nationwide, one company was in arrears in excess of over $200 million because they had invested it in their company and lost that money. So it's time that we started to put some sort of sideboards on facilitators and what they can and cannot do with the money, and it needs to be put in a secure area so the client as well as the facilitator have access to that money, and you can't have one without the other in a kind of like a double signature on a bank draft. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Alan Brickley, who is the instigator of this.
For the record, my name is Alan Brickley. I'm counsel for First American Title Insurance Company. I'm just going to make a few general comments and then allow the other two speakers to address the bill more specifically if there are any questions. But Representative Esquivel is correct. There are more than one incident of the accommodator who was run off with the money or poorly invested it, whatever, and what has happened is then that the industry association, the Federation of Exchange Accommodators, recognizing the need for a regulation, has put together a model bill which has been introduced in other states and adopted in some other states, and we're asking that this bill be viewed by this committee and by this legislature and adopted so that we can have some fairly consistent national regulation and certainly on a state level a regulation of accommodators.
Any questions for either of these witnesses?
Yes. Representative Edwards.
Did we hear this in Business and Labor, this bill? Was it?
Chair, Representative Edwards, no, we did not. In fact, I was the one that brought it. I had to bring it forward as a priority bill to pull it away from Business and Labor at that point because the deadline had passed and we let that get through.
Okay.
And it's it's a very important consumer protection bill.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. We don't have the fiscal or the other on this bill yet, so FISRIS. Okay. So we'll have to wait before it can.
I'm sorry.
The FISRIS, the fiscal statement or the
revenue statement.
Revenue. We don't have either one of them. Fiscal. I hate that word. But. So we'll have to hold it over, but I just wanted you to know that. We'll get the testimony today.
And Mr. Chair, I'll be very surprised if it takes much to regulate this because I believe we can regulate this pretty sensibly. So
I hope. I mean, as you know, we have seen them come back with enormous numbers that surprise us at times, but just thought I'd throw that out there.
Mr. Chair, I agree 100%. I believe I did a bill that changed a few words, and the fiscal came back like $40,000-$50,000 to change a couple of words. So, yeah, you're right. Thank you.
Thank you both. And we'll get the next two people shortly, but we're going to go back to our other, the HJR 13, because we have one person to hear from, and that's Lori Wimmer from OEA. So thank you. And John, come on up too. There's David. I see David as well.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, David Williams of the Oregon School Boards Association. Frankly, my colleague and I heard there was going to be some discussion down here about schools of fish. We thought maybe we could count them as ADMW for some
that's
of
right.
those schools, so that's why we're here. Well, maybe it's too soon to joke about the formula. I'm not sure. I want to thank the committee for hearing House Joint Resolution 13. Some members of the committee have heard it a couple times. My testimony will look very familiar to them, having heard it in previous committees. This is a fabulous piece of legislation that will give school districts additional authority when issuing their local general obligation bonds, and additionally will give your successors, or some of you, depending on how long you decide to hang around this place, additional authority down the road in assisting K-12 schools with their capital construction needs. The legislation, as admirably described by the speaker, has two main parts. The first is it broadens the definition of capital construction for a local GO bond. Great example of things that districts cannot currently purchase with their GO bonds would be asphalt to repave parking lots, and bleachers that are not permanently affixed to the ground can also not be purchased with GO bond authority. These are things that I don't think anybody would argue have extended usable life, and therefore districts should be allowed to incur debt to pay for them, and we think that a local GO bond authority is a great vehicle for that. The second piece in the legislation would add an additional section of the Constitution to align K-12 with the rest of our education counterparts in higher ed and community colleges, giving you as a legislative body or future legislative bodies the authority to issue state general obligation bonds to help assist in paying for K-12 capital construction. The language in this section is written such that it would allow you the authority to either issue bonds and distribute grants to school districts in some sort of matching format, or potentially, given the magnitude of what we're potentially looking at, it would also give you the authority to issue those dollars in the form of loans as well, depending on the fiscal climate in the state in the future. The legislation is part of a broad package that I'm sad to say is not in any one committee, but I am happy to say is actively being worked in multiple committees. Just this week passed out of the Senate Revenue Committee a House bill that makes modifications to the construction excise tax that you all approved last session that will help clarify some authority in that. In a hearing tomorrow in the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means is legislation that would create a task force to do a comprehensive review of K-12 capital infrastructure around the state. And in a hearing at this very moment in the Capital Construction Subcommittee of Ways and Means is legislation that would redirect portions of lottery funds into the capital matching subaccount fund that is currently in underneath the Education Stability Fund. So a great piece of legislation. I hope you all will consider support for it. Having reviewed the policy previously in the Revenue Committee, I do want to just highlight the aspect of the elections of this. We do believe that this is a fairly, in the eyes of the voter, a fairly technical amendment that brings about reasonable changes to our Constitution, and believe that it will be very well received by the electorate, and we hope that you will support it as such. The Speaker did note that it got 52 aye votes in the House 2 years ago, and I will point out that nobody on this committee voted no on the floor of the chamber. So hopefully we'll receive such support from you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for your record, Lori Wimmer representing the Oregon Education Association, its 48,000 members. We were part of the Education Funding Coalition both last session, this session, as well as the Speaker's Capital Construction Work Group that created a package of bills. And this bill before you, this resolution, I should say, before you today, is a piece of unfinished business from the 2007 session, and we hope that it is able to go all the way this time. And thank the Speaker and all of you for being willing to help us get that done. One of the points that I thought I would make about the importance of having a general obligation bonding authority piece in the state is that, like the local option law, which was favorably amended in 2000 to have a power equalization or matching money from the state, this is a way for not only the state to have participation in the facility inventory of our public school system for the first time, but also to provide some incentive for districts that wouldn't otherwise have the economic and political wherewithal to pass GO bonds on their own. As you may know, when the power equalization local option match law was passed in 2000 in every one of the 36 counties by an overwhelming margin, the result was that a lot of districts that are not considered with respect to property wealth per student to be affluent did in fact persuade their voters to vote yes on some local option bonds. In fact, two of them passed last night. And so we believe that having a GO match possibility or even a loan possibility on the general obligation bonds, which are, of course, outside of Measures 5 and 50, not inside the gap, will give some more wherewithal to some of those districts that are not as affluent as others. And so we think of that as an equity piece as well. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions, but just hope that this is something that you all feel can be passed on.
Any questions for these witnesses?
Just a comment, Mr.
Yes, Representative.
Yeah, I'd like to say that the way this package has been spread out all over the map, you could call it a full employment plan for lobbyists following these bills.
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Berger, that's a real worry for me. I know.
I understand.
Really
thank
thing.
You.
Yeah.
I am. I do appreciate the complications of it, but I voted for this in the past and have supported again.
Well, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Vice Chair Berger, I'm not sure about the full employment, but certainly the full day act.
There you go. Well, Mr. Chair, if I'm here at 4:35,
exactly.
I'm happy to be here. I like company.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak to HJR 13A? Seeing none, we're going to close our public hearing on HJR 13A, and we're going to open a work session on HJR 13A. I would have a...
Mr. Chair, I move
HJR
13A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Adopted.
Be adopted. To the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Everybody knows what it means.
Representative Edwards moves HJR 13A to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Girard?
Excused.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roland?
Aye. Motion carries, and we'll let see if Speaker Hunt wants to carry this.
And Mr. Chair, if Mr. Speaker does not wish to carry it, having become intimately engaged with this bill on many occasions, I would be very,
okay, very
happy
good.
To do
so
it.
So we'll check with Representative Hunt, and if not, it'll be Representative Gelser. Thank you very much. With that, we'll go back to our public hearing. We have two people to speak on House Bill 3484, and that would be, is it Jay Dobson and Tanya Gutler? Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Jay Dobson. I'm counsel for First American Title and Insurance Company, and more importantly, with regard to this legislation, I'm regional vice president of First American Exchange Company, which is an exchange accommodator that does business across the country and in more particular in this area. As such, I've been working in the real estate field for over 30 years and as an exchange accommodator since 1992, so we have some experience. We're here to my left here is Toya Butler, who's with Investment Property Exchange Company, and I'll let you give her background, but we're both with the Federation of Exchange Accommodators, which is an industry group that works with exchange accommodators, and we're both here to support the passage of this legislation. As a whole, the industry in the past has tried to avoid regulation because businesses tend to try to avoid legislation. But in the last couple of years, there have been some major failures, which basically points out the really need to have at least some minimal regulation and requirements. And I won't go through the details of those four. Representative Escobar mentioned some of them. We believe that this bill adequately addresses the needs of consumers and allows industry to continue to work in the field without undue too much regulation, but meeting both needs and supports of both. So in the materials I've given you, one is an article that's written based upon the California legislation, and this bill is based upon the California legislation and discusses accommodators and the role of accommodators with regard to that California legislation. It was written in out of our California office to give the committee some background on the topic. And also, there are a list of some technical amendments because the California legislation was adopted last fall, and then as a lot of things, in looking at the legislation, there are some things that could be technically adjusted. And so those are some of the suggestions that the industry is suggesting that be made in this case to make for some of those technical adjustments. But on the whole, we're in favor of the legislation as proposed. Toya?
Thank you, Jay. I'm Toya Butler. I am from Portland and the manager for Investment Property Exchange Services, Inc., as Jay recalled. I prefer to refer to it as IPX 1031. It's a little easier to say. And we're the exchange company for Chicago Title, Fidelity Title, Lawyers Title, and Tycor Title. And I, like Jay, have been doing exchange work for 17 years and have been very proud of that work for 17 years until these recent failures. And so this legislation, we do support it. I'm here to ditto Jay's comments. We support the legislation. There are a couple of corrections we are asking for and a couple of technical corrections, and you'll see that laid out by the Federation of Exchange Accommodator comments. And I will point out that the couple of the critical changes we're requesting have actually been made in subsequent Colorado and Washington State legislation that has passed. So we are getting smarter as we do this, and so we're asking for a couple of changes in that legislation. But we do support this. We've been fine without regulation up until now, and then we've had some folks that have taken advantage of the arrangement. I think that Representative Esquivel is correct that there won't be a lot of financial in this, because primarily what this does is establishes some guidance, some requirements regarding investment of the funds, prudent investor standard, that kind of thing, and it gives the exchange client a cause of action should they be harmed by an exchange company's mishandling of their funds.
Probably it does several things. One, it requires a notice if the ownership has changed. The reason that has become important is because in at least two or maybe three of these failures, they were existing exchange companies that were very well run and very well managed and had very good reputations. Somebody came in and bought those companies, but their customers were unaware of the change in ownership and change in management, and then those funds were inappropriately taken or invested and causing, in one case, a loss of $100 million in, I forget the final dollar figure for the other one and the more recent.
$120 million, I believe.
Right. And so this bill requires, if there's a large change in ownership of the company, that it notice be given to the consumers so that they'll be aware that things are not the same as it was before. We're suggesting that the bill be modified so that if the company is publicly traded, the whole process of being publicly traded gives full disclosure, so you don't need to include changes in ownership of stock when it's publicly traded. First American Title, for example, is publicly traded, and First American Exchange is a subsidiary of First American Title. The second major thing it does, it requires some basic bonding and requirements so that there are at least some minimal protections for consumers, both in fidelity bonds and
errors and omissions insurance.
The third thing it does is it requires the prudent investor standard, which will regulate and make sure that funds get invested appropriately. At this present time, there's nothing that prevents someone from investing funds any way they want to. Land America Exchange was a recent spectacular failure last fall, where $600 million was invested in funds that turned out to be not liquid, which would probably not meet the requirements of this bill. In another case, one of these companies that funded, he was investing funds with his own takeoff industry that he was hoping to make a lot of money on.
Is that the breast implant manufacturer?
Breast implants, which for some reason didn't take off, and he lost $100 million. Under this bill, it wouldn't meet the prudent investment standard, and plus this bill prohibits you investing in a related company, so you couldn't invest the funds in a related company. Right now, without regulation, that's permitted. So those are the three basic things. None of those things require specific government regulatory action, so it should not involve any expense. And we think it's a reasonable alternative because right now the field is completely unregulated and allows, unfortunately, some disreputable people to do things to the detriment of the consumer. The two major things that we would like to suggest for changes in the bill, right now it covers, it's designed to cover companies that are actively have an office in the state or close transactions where the property is located in the state. The way the bill is worded now, it also includes anyone who does any advertising that might touch on an Oregon person, so that if you were a Florida company and had no intention of doing any business in Oregon, maybe even with an internet site, since internet is sometimes considered advertising, that would pull them within the scope of this bill, which the industry thinks might be a little bit broader, and that has not been That provision has been deleted from the Washington and Colorado legislation. The other thing is on the investment standards, you'll notice that one of the provisions almost provides for strict liability if the investments fail. So if you put your funds in a bank, that, and we've seen some cases with some financial institutions last fall that got into desperate trouble and could have failed if they didn't get bailed out. If the funds were there, it would put strict liability on the accommodator, and maybe that provision ought to be deleted as redundant and overly strict. It would be covered by this prudent investment rule, which would already cover making sure your funds are prudently invested. And then the other provisions that are suggested for amendments are technical changes, which we'd be glad to address if you have any questions.
Thanks. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To either of you, you said you were going through the three things. I was reading some stuff while you were talking. I missed, you said that number two was basic bonding requirements, errors and omissions insurance.
Right.
Three was prudent investor standard. What was the first one?
Well, the first one is notification if ownership of the company changes.
Oh, okay.
And that has become, well, it was a problem with some of the major failures. They were existing accommodation companies that were well run and had very good reputations, and their customers work with them, not realizing that they had been purchased by a third source who was not as reputable and not as careful with the funds, and those people lost their money because they didn't know that the ownership had changed.
Follow-up question, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill just sets these requirements in statute, does not create any licensing per se or a direct relationship with an agency that is actively regulating actions in this industry.
That is correct, and I think it has to do with a balance between trying to get some regulation there but not creating a fiscal impact upon regulating industry.
And who is able to, what class of businesses is able to do this now? Can anybody do this, or are there?
Basically, the industry was created by Internal Revenue Service regulations that were created in 1991. And anyone can be a qualified intermediary. There's no regulation on who can be a qualified intermediary. Somebody once called me up in the early days and asked, how do I get into this business? And I wanted to joke, well, go to ITT Tech. But really, tomorrow you could hang a sign outside a door and say you're a qualified intermediary. There's nothing out there that regulates who can or can't be.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I'd be interested in finding out to what extent you got the amendments that you've suggested, to what extent you've worked with Representative Esquivel in having a conversation. I'm also interested in are there significant classes of professionals, say attorneys and folks like that, that do this type of work who are maybe not just in this business and who may have different views on this bill than the actual people that just specialize just in this business?
Right. It's an interesting topic. In other parts of the country, attorneys and law firms do get into the exchange accommodator business, but that's not been the case in the state of Oregon. In the state of Oregon, actually the major exchange accommodators have been often related to title insurance companies, which we form subsidiaries to assist our title, real property customers. There are a couple other independents out there. Most of them are related to title insurance companies. One of the major failures in Oregon was related to an accountant firm.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
And have you talked to Representative Esquivel about amendments?
And I have to apologize for this. We just got an email yesterday from the national body of Federation Exchange Accommodators who said, oh, and here's some technical amendments that we'd like you to make sure get presented. We just became aware of them. So,
right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's my intention to take these amendments to Representative Esquivel and ask for his review and approval to submit them to Legislative Council.
Thank you very much. So with that, we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 34 84, and we'll look forward to having a work session in the future when we have some of that stuff ready. Thank you very much. With that, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2682A. It was carried over. We'll have a short explanation from our administrator what we're going to be doing, and I expect we'll move this bill. And hopefully we have all the paperwork we need.
I believe we do. House Bill 2682A, which has been before the committee before, directs the Joint Legislative Interim Committee to study the feasibility of implementing a commercial surety bail system in Oregon and requires the committee to study six specific areas and invites participation from various agencies. Those are essentially the provisions of the Dash 6 amendment that replaces the bill. We have the fiscal and revenue on the Dash 6. It is, I believe, in your packet. No revenue and a minimal fiscal. So we should be in good position.
So have we adopted the Dash 7? Is it 6s? Have we adopted? We did adopt them last time, I believe.
One piece of information I left over. Dash 6 was adopted when it was previously considered.
Yes, it was. Okay. So the Dash 6 has been adopted. I would entertain a motion. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2682, as we amended it in last time, with the Dash 6, to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 2682A as amended.
Well, with a do-pass.
With a do-pass. To the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Yes.
That's
it, yeah. So, any discussion? Okay. Then we'll have a roll call vote on our do-pass motion.
Representative Girard?
Excused.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Robel?
Aye. Motion passes. Is there anyone here that would really love to carry this bill? We're going to give it to Representative Barker.
There you go.
Perfect person.
Great idea, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. And if he won't, I'll do it, but we'll have him do it. We're going to close our work session on House Bill 2682A. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3401. We'll have a short explanation of that bill.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. House Bill 3401 allows a public employer participating in the public employee's retirement system to request that excess amounts in a side account established for lump sum payments either be refunded to the employer or applied to offset contributions to an individual account. The Dash 3 amendments which were adopted changed that and basically eliminated the option of having it refunded to the employer. And we have the revenue statement. There is no revenue impact. We are supposed to have the fiscal, but I have not seen it, so we can hold off on this a bit. I will call Erica again to see if we have got it.
Let's hold off on this for a second. And so we'll have
yes.
Script.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to leave this session open while he works on that, and we're going to open, I'm going to ask for possible reconsideration of House Bill 3489. That was the bill that I testified to on the hatcheries, and the problem was we sent it out, and we had not gotten a letter saying that the Ways and Means had been rescinded, and so... We made a little error there, so we need to bring that. So I would entertain a motion to suspend the rules.
No. You don't want to suspend the rules. You just go with this.
Oh, I would ask the committee for unanimous consent to reconsider the vote by which House Bill 3489 was moved out of the committee with a do-pass recommendation without mentioning the disposition of the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, so order. Now.
Yeah, once again before the floor, and you can ask for a motion.
Okay. Now the measure is once again before the committee, and so I will ask for a motion.
This is the motion.
And here's the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3489 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
And do we don't have to say anything about substantive referral being removed?
I don't believe you have to say that. But
we just removed it?
Okay, that's true. I guess we did.
We have a letter to that effect.
Okay. So Representative Edwards moves the House Bill 3489 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote. The letter has been accepted that we don't have a Ways and Means referral. So with that.
Representative Girard?
Excused.
Representative Gelzer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Rola?
Would you stand down a second? Let me check that. Right on mine.
I think it's hard to do that right in the middle of a vote.
Of a vote.
So aye, and I will. Motion passes, and we'll send it to the floor. Thank you very much. And I would be glad to carry this bill since it was my bill. So thank you. And we haven't heard back on our other one yet. So we'll stand at ease for a second while we find out if we have the appropriate paperwork to move the other bill.
What's the bill number on the one we're waiting to move?
3401. Back to order. I request unanimous. I'll go back to my other one. I would like the committee to unanimous consent to reconsider immediately the vote upon which we took on House Bill 3049. It was moved to the committee out of the committee with a due pass recommendation without the mentioning of the disposition of the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any objection?
No.
Seeing none, so order. So, now, do I need to get somebody else to do this? Okay. I move that we reconsider the vote by which we sent House Bill 3489 to the floor with a due pass recommendation without the disposition of the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any objection? Seeing none, that's so ordered. Now, the House Bill 3489 is before you.
I need a motion. To set the floor and to
rescind the subsequent. Okay. I need a vote to. So, Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair,
With great trepidation, I move House Bill 3489 to the floor with the due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Okay. Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3489 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and with notice that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means has been rescinded.
Discussion.
Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Girard?
Excused.
Representative Gelser?
That was good.
Representative Jensen?
Excused.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Rowland?
Aye. Motion passes, and I will carry this bill on the floor. I hope I don't have as many troubles on the floor for this bill.
Close the work
session. And anything else? We'll close the work session on House Bill 3484. Okay.
3489.
Close the work session on 3489. I'm looking at the other one. Okay. Thank you. It's getting late. Oh, we've got about 16 more bills. No, we're going to push them over because we're too late now. It's 5 o'clock.
We've had it.
And we're too tired anyway, so, or I am, so. So, yes, we've done 34-1,
34-1.
No. Yeah, we moved to 34-1, didn't we?
We don't have
34-1.
We will not have the fiscal today.
On 34-1.
Correct.
Okay.
So we don't move. So I need to close the work session on 34-1, because I think we had that open.
We had it open.
We don't have the paperwork for that one. How about 2867?
2867? That was one you were going to hold over.
Okay. So we're going to hold over House Bill 2867. We'll put it on the Wednesday agenda coming up.
Okay.
And then we're going to hold over 2895, and we'll put that on the first docket on Friday. I think we have three bills up for Friday, so we'll put it up as the first order of business on Friday as a work session only. And we're going to also carry over House Bill 2853. And we'll do that till Wednesday as well, so we'll repost that as well. I think that takes care of all of them. Yep. Okay. So, with all that business done, I thank you for your patience in helping get a couple of these bills corrected. So, and I personally want to put on the record that we thank the clerk of the House for saving the day. So, with all that said, we're going to adjourn our Rules Committee meeting today.